Katie was, for English class, she's doing reading that book. It's called Night. I don't know if any of you have read it about, what is it?
The Holocaust.
Elise Weiss. And it was really interesting because he was, he's a 15-year-old kid and he's going through the Holocaust experience. And with his dad, his mom and sister had disappeared and he never saw them again once they were went through the selection, the first selection after the train cars. And when they first were taken away, he was talking, there's 50 people to a train car. After they've been about 3 years in the thing and they're moving because the Americans and the Russians are coming closer to the concentration camp he was in, they put 100 of them to a boxcar. And in the story, while they're marching to these boxcars, though, he starts talking about that he noticed that there was another father's son that had, he was a rabbi, and his son started walking away, and his father couldn't keep up. And he realized that son's leaving that dad behind because he has a better chance if he leaves him behind and just has to care for himself instead of taking care of his dad. And he said, now he's already, in the book it starts off that he's like, if they're, when they are going through the ovens and they're throwing selection and just throwing the people in the ovens, he says that's the day his faith died. Yep. And I just thought it was interesting because when he gets to the boxcars and he realized that guy left his dad, he's like, I said a prayer, like, God, I don't want to ever leave my dad. I don't want to be like that. And Katie's teacher was asking, is it possible for people to be good during these bad times? And it was just interesting because she was like, well, of course it is, because it depends on how you were raised. There's a lot of people who did do wrong and left their family and let them die. But he, grew up in a religious home and stuff, and he never did live his dad. And I thought that was precious because it's like, God, I want that in me. Whatever it is that even in these rough times that I go through, I want to be able to stand and do the right thing. And so.
As long as his spirit could do that. Because God knows how to bring us through this stuff. So it's an incredible book. He was an incredibly insightful person. And it was printed indelibly on his mind and soul. And it's astounding how the flesh becomes filled with its own sense of need. Just filled with it. Because they were starved continuously. And he said that he just simply was he was reduced to nothing but a stomach that needed something to eat. And so it's incredible what terrible things those people went through. But God's got a plan for these last days. And he's got to bring the church to a place that it's willing to leave everything behind as it presses on towards him. And we think we can kind of do that. And the truth is God helps us as we come through these things. But it's interesting because he knows what sets us absolutely free. And he's bringing us to that kind of a place in our life to be able to run with him and just to follow after him and let his spirit and presence lead us. So he's fulfilling these things in the church and getting it ready. The Jewish people, were reduced to death and destruction, and Europe became a death trap for them. A lot of the Jewish people left. They began to sense how things were going, and they had a sense of foreboding about staying in Europe. And I believe that was the Spirit of God bringing wisdom to those people who would come out, who would be obedient and come. Some people clung to their riches, and that's why Jesus said, if you're in the field, don't come back for your stuff. And if you're on the rooftop, don't come down for your stuff. Don't make things the important part of your life. So it's easy to talk like that. It's not so easy to leave your stuff. But the Spirit and presence of God is bringing us to that place where we're understanding what he's really talking about. So, I want to go to John and just read a few verses here in John chapter 12. It's been a busy week in the spirit realm. We've had lots going on, and I thank God for all that He's bringing people through, because it's interesting how God works in us. He gets things out of us, don't He? We think we're doing pretty good, and then we encounter something, and then we find out, wow, actually I'm not doing as great as I think I'm doing. As long as I'm up on the mountain, things are good. And you end up down in the valley, and it's not so much fun. So, but He watches over us perpetually. And He gets out of us those things that He knows we need out, you guys. And that's the great thing. And how He does that, lots of times, is just by putting us around people that love us and then turning us loose. And actually, out of us comes those things that are inside. And the longer you spend with somebody, the more you act like yourself. You know what I'm saying? You get comfortable. And there's a lot of things you don't want to do in front of people till you get to know them better. I wouldn't want to eat watermelon in front of people I didn't know, because I get it all over my face. It runs down my chin. It is good, except when people don't know me. I don't want them to see watermelon running down my chin. I'm just shy about those kinds of things. So, but once you get to know people, it's no big deal. When you know them well enough, well, thanks. So, but God watches over us. So, Jesus, 12th chapter, and he's been invited to that dinner we know well. Jesus, 6 days before the Passover, came to Bethany. So within 6 days, he's going to be crucified. 6 days away, he's going to be crucified. And so he's been invited to a party where Lazarus was also invited. Lazarus wouldn't be the stature of a person that would be invited to this kind of company unless, of course, he'd been raised from the dead. So he was a very famous man, and interestingly enough, he was invited to this dinner that Jesus was invited to. So both Jesus was invited and Lazarus to this dinner. So we get a glimpse of what Jesus is going through, because he knows that at this coming Passover, in just 6 days, he's going to be beaten beyond recognition. You know, it'd be very difficult to have that foreknowledge and be comfortable at a dinner. Because even though you know that you've given your life as a ransom and you're willing to pay that price, it still, to your flesh, is a very difficult battle. And we know he was fighting a battle because the devil had Peter tell him, "You're not going to die. You're not going to die." And Jesus rebuked him and said, "Get behind me, Satan, for you don't savor the things that are of God but of the flesh." So that sense of what was going on was already in Jesus. That's why Satan would tempt Peter to say that, "You're not going to die." Because he was fighting with that, to be beaten beyond recognition, to suffocate, to be beaten to death for our healing. Because he understood he wasn't just going to be crucified. He understood that he was going to be beaten with a cat of nine tails that would remove the flesh from his back. You die from it. The injuries are so catastrophic from this beating that the 40 stripes is death. If they were going to kill you, if you were sentenced to death by stripes, they'd beat you 40 stripes. They beat him 39 stripes. I can assure you, you are going to die from your injuries. So he is beaten on a cold night when your skin is cold. Pain is unbearable. Peter's at the fire warming himself. So we know it's a cold enough night that Peter's wanting to stand close to the fire to stay warm. And Jesus has been tied to a post and he's being beaten relentlessly, because there were actually 9 different tails on that whip. So it's an incredibly cruel instrument. And he knows that's going to happen, because the Bible said by his stripes we were healed. And so the Bible prophesied in the prophets that Jerusalem would be plowed and there would be furrows, so nice straight stripes. And we know that that happened to Jerusalem. It actually was destroyed by the Roman Empire 7 years after Jesus. For a few years, people were there and they kept raising up in rebellion. Finally, the Roman Empire came back and plowed the city. They turned the rock into a smooth thing. But I know that there's also a prophecy about Christ being beaten like that. So, came to Bethlehem. Okay, let me start the first verse over. Then Jesus, 6 days before Passover, came to Bethany, where Lazarus was, which had been dead, whom he raised from the dead. There they made him a supper, and Martha served. But Lazarus was one of them that sat at the table with him. Then took Mary a pound of ointment of spikenard, very costly, and anointed the feet of Jesus and wiped his feet with her hair. And the house was filled with the odor of the ointment. So there are people that argue that this isn't Lazarus' sister Mary. But the way John tells the story is very clear, because he's telling you Martha served, Lazarus sat at table, and Mary came in and anointed his feet. And that's because in the other Gospels, one of the other Gospels, it tells you that the people that were sitting at the meal said that if Jesus were a prophet, he wouldn't let Mary touch him. But what's interesting is that the spirit and presence of God had changed her. And so this is the way God tells the story. He's not trying to belittle her or berate her. John doesn't tell you any of those things except that she brought the ointment. Then said one of the disciples, Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, which should betray him, "Why was not this ointment sold for 300 pence and given to the poor?" This he said, not that he cared for the poor, but because he was a thief and had the bag and bare what was put therein. So it's interesting, you guys. When Satan wants to make an accusation, because there was an accusation against Mary, Satan hated what she was doing. He hated what she was doing. And I can tell you that there are some things that you're going to do in life that Satan is going to pick at you. He wants to show contempt at you and raise up people angry and frustrated at you to say these kinds of things. So it sounded very religious to someone in the room, be like, "Wow, Judas is thinking about the poor." He wasn't thinking about the poor. He's a thief. Yeah. It's very easy to judge things on the surface. And the thing is, we let go by what the real truth is. Jesus knew what the truth was. And that's why it was recorded here. He understood. Here's what's happening. Judas is acting like a saint, and he's a thief. And so he's angry at Mary because of this thing that's going on, and he's enraged in his spirit. And that's because, you guys, it's a fulfillment of prophecy. What she's doing was prophesied in the Songs of Solomon. So here's what Satan hates is when God's word is being fulfilled, and it's being fulfilled a lot in this hour in his church. So then said Jesus, "Let her alone. Against the day of my burying hath she kept this. For the poor always you have with you, but me you have not always." So you guys, what Jesus said was, there's always going to be poor people on the earth. But you don't always have me. She's doing this for my burial, and to take 300 pence wouldn't make a dent in taking care of the poor. But he said, you have poor with you always. So the idea for the church is that we watch out for each other. We deal with each other. But God made provisions for people to deal with the poor. So he said this, "Much people of the Jews, therefore, knew that he was there. And they came not for Jesus' sake only, but that they might see Lazarus also, whom he had raised from the dead. But the chief priests consulted that they might put Lazarus also to death." Of course, they want to put Jesus to death, but they're consulting so that they can put Lazarus to death too. And I talk about this all the time. Every time I mention this, I can hardly take in that these priests thought that they could kill a man that had been raised from the dead. I mean, with the power of resurrection, Jesus brought him up out of it. This man was already dead 4 days. And so now you're thinking that you could kill him. You're going to kill Jesus who raised him from the dead. That's power. And you're going to kill him so there's no witness. We're going to get rid of the witnesses. or the witness, so that nobody can come to see him. This whole dinner is about him. This whole town has turned out because this man is alive, and he was dead for 4 days, and everybody in the town knew it. So you can see, you guys, that as Jesus comes down to this place where he's about to be crucified, the thing that's going on is that he is resurrection life. So, if he's doing things in this hour, if he's beginning to show himself ready to rescue and to bring people out of these things that the enemy would be warring against, you can see that there's something happening in here because he's about to be crucified. And now Lazarus dies, and it's his friend. And Jesus comes, and he raises him from the dead. But what we're seeing right now in this country is a tremendous warfare against the Christian church. Sin has taken a stranglehold on the nation, on young people. You guys, it's incredible how much drug addiction there is in this country. In southern Missouri, there's meth problems that are deep, you guys. And the pharmaceuticals, the pharmaceutical drugs are bought and sold on a market. Tons of money is made through that. And you guys, what happens is that people need something to create peace in them. They're looking for peace for something that's going on in their life. And you guys, that's why God's saying, hey, when these things came about, he said, when you see these things come, you know that the end is near. When you see nation rising against nation, kingdom against kingdom, he said, you know it's not the end, but you're seeing these things because it's a warning from God, because things are encroaching upon us. So things are changing around us, and God's talking to his people about the sense of whether or not we would stay in the church and receive the kind of confrontation that the world wants to give the Christian community now. We've had a blessed time in the country in the sense that the church was looked at and people revered preachers and they thought well of the people of God. Communities were made strong by the righteousness of the community that was built on, not nostalgia, not looking back and saying, wow, we had a great run in the 40s and 50s. It was that righteousness was exalting the nation. The Bible said righteousness exalted the nation, but sin is a reproach to any people. So what we've come to is sin has taken over this nation, and we're watching this decline in people that can think right and make good decisions. It seems like a no-brainer to me. The things that have been going on in politics should just simply be stopped. We have law. This battle over people coming in the United States, you guys, we've had immigration law. And because one president decided that we're going to throw away all immigration law, then now we have a problem because this President Trump is causing trouble. He's not causing trouble. He's saying, let's go back to the law. What he keeps telling Congress to do is change the law. If you don't like the law, change it. And you guys, the thing that happens is, if we are lawless, if we accept lawlessness as a nation, and we're accepting that, that's why we're pushing these things about doing lawless things. We're not kept by any law. We can just do what we want to feel good about. God, that isn't how you do stuff. You do stuff by law and order. So if you have a law that nobody likes, then change the law. Yeah? You change the law. You don't say it's okay, we don't have to keep the law. Marijuana has a destructive effect on people. You guys, I had friends that I was growing up with that started smoking marijuana when they were in high school. One of my friends wanted to be an Air Force pilot. And he took the classes to become an Air Force pilot in high school. Then he was going to go, he was making an application to go to the Air Force Academy at Colorado Springs. His dad was an Air Force specialist in photo espionage. This kid showed me pictures of a vehicle taken from space. And you could read the license plate on it. You could read the license plate on it. It astounded me. He worked in Roswell, New Mexico. You guys, that's the kind of tech he was. So his son would be a shoo-in to the police academy, or to the Air Force Academy. But the thing is, he started smoking dope. And what happened is, things didn't matter anymore. If he could be high, he didn't care what he did. So he dropped out of some of his classes. He met a girl. She smoked pot with him. They started smoking pot. You guys, he never got married. He never got married. That he eventually found girls that he could use in prostitution. And he used those girls, and that's how he was making money. When I came out of Vietnam, that's how he was making money. And you guys, all of his life has been at the same exact level. It never changed. His mind deteriorated. His sense of doing things stopped. My other friend that started doing marijuana at the same time died probably 15 years ago. So you guys, if I look back at across the road of the things that are going on, you can tell me that Colorado is okay because they've okayed pot. But every life I have seen that has yielded itself to that has taken no sense of direction, and it just kind of floats through life because it's just happy getting high. So what we need is to have something inside of us that says, look, I have something to do. Your life needs a direction. Your life needs a reason that you get up and do the things that you do. And if your plan is just to get a paycheck on Friday, that's no plan. That's a paycheck on Friday. And any job will give you a paycheck on Friday, and pretty soon you learn that. So you don't care what kind of job you've got as long as you get your paycheck on Friday and do the things you want to do. So what God's talking to the church about is there's a plan, and here's what the plan is. God said, I want you to be perfect. Now, how's that for a plan? And how long would you have to work on that plan with God? Yeah, pretty much till it was done. Yeah? So you guys, there are short-term plans, right? It's like, hey, what I'm going to do is I'm going to keep my grades up till track is over, and then once track is over, school's almost out. Who couldn't pass at that point? All I have to do is get out of school, and next year I'm in a different grade. That's sort of a plan. It's short term, but it's a plan, yeah? Because if you need incentive to get better grades, well, that's an incentive. But it's a short term plan. Now, if you're thinking about being a discus thrower in the Olympics, your plan takes on something of a much longer status in your life. Am I right? You eat different. You exercise different. You get up at a different hour than everybody else on the planet. Why is that? I don't know, but every Olympic gold medal winner that I ever saw, they show you pictures of them training in the dark. Skaters. You don't need to skate in the dark. Skate in the daylight. Get up at 9 o'clock. Day's too short. The day's too short. And what they're doing is they're training what? They're training their flesh in subjection. The little girl that was the gold medal gymnast, when Michelle Obama asked her, what did you do to reward yourself after you had finished getting your gold medal? She said, I went to McDonald's. And Michelle Obama's aghast because, you know, she chokes herself at the thought. She said, you went to McDonald's? It's like she had one hamburger in 7 years. Let's see, one hamburger, 7 years. I don't see a whole lot of problem in that. You could even throw in fries and not hurt yourself bad. Am I right? But what's the concept? This girl had way more discipline than Michelle Obama. She's never been to the Olympics. I just would ask, hey, I didn't see you at the Olympics. Show me your gold medal, and I'll show you my hamburger box. And my gold medal. But you guys, you see, when you have a long-term plan, when your long-term plan meets someone else's long-term plan, they may not understand your long-term plan at all. Michelle Obama's long-term plan is to fight against what we eat, because that's what communism does. I was in Cuba. I was in Cuba. And you guys, you couldn't believe that in a tropical country that banana trees could be outlawed. Banana trees were outlawed in Cuba. Do you know why? Because if you wanted a banana tree in your yard, you wanted more than the revolution. You wanted more than other people in your country. Because not everybody has a banana tree in their yard. So therefore, if you want a banana tree in your yard, you're saying, you know what, I wouldn't be satisfied with what everybody has. And that's what communism is about. It's about to bring your emotional man and your appetites in under the same dominion. You think that wouldn't work, huh? Because here's the deal. Christianity has perfection. Humanism has perfection. Christianity has perfection. Humanism has perfection. Total dominion over the flesh. No chickens. People could not have chickens. I sat and talked with the pastor's wife on a balcony. Rain pouring down. Her daughter and her son-in-law were inside the house. Her son-in-law was a pastor. Her husband was a pastor. She was an elderly woman. And when the rain began to pour down, she came out and sat and talked with me. And the more I talked about Jesus, really talked about Jesus, the more she talked to me. Because in a country that you don't trust anybody, there are some things nobody says. And when you talk about Jesus Christ being the liberator, when you talk about the things that God does, that He's promised provisions for the body, you realize that God is talking something more than what would be allowed in that country. And with the rain pouring down, nobody could hear what we were doing. And she began to talk. And you guys, that was an astounding thing to me. Because I realized that what she was saying was absolutely true. She gets one chicken, leg and thigh, a month because she has diabetes and needs the extra protein. What is one chicken, leg and thigh a month? What is one chicken, leg and one thigh a month? They're brown beans. They got a pound or 2 pounds a month. They got pork. But you guys, the thing is, they could buy beans, but they were $8 at the market for a pound of what we would call brown beans. Red beans, black beans, same price. So you guys, the thing is, people were allotted a certain amount of something, but you lived on a starvation diet doing that. And you could buy food, but it cost you a lot to buy the food. So you lived at that level. You lived at that level. So Celine and I talked to the concierge. I said, hey, there must be some nice restaurants in the town. Havana, Cuba. He said, well, of course there are restaurants. We have two restaurants in Havana, Cuba. We have two restaurants. Of course we have restaurants. We have two restaurants. Celine and I went to a little restaurant that had a covering that was not finished. I mean, it leaked. And it didn't keep the water out. So what they did is, because remember, we're getting rain every day. He and I went in there, and the roof is shedding water to the middle. It's dropped down into a little trough. They've dug and put plants in it, and it looks like a little river. Wow, what a beautiful little flowing thing. That's because your roof's been leaking, and you got to do something with it. So you tell yourself, we'll dig a little trench to shed the water. Then somebody else said, hey, why don't we put some stuff in it? It'll look not like a trench, but it'll look like we did this. They landscaped their little trench. And you could order pork. You could order pork three different ways, but you could order only pork. So you guys, this is Havana, Cuba, and we're treated as tourists. Celine and I were treated as tourists. Yeah, they had different money. They had two Cuban monies. They had one that the tourists could buy, and they had one that the workers earned. And the preacher there told me, this is how much money I make. And he said, a doctor here makes the equivalent of $8 a month. Our doctors make $8 a month. So he said, I make less than that, but he said, I'm paid in the secondary currency, which is less than what you get, because I had money that I bought Cuban currency. And so I told him, well, I've got that much money. He said, well, that's more money than what I get. I get the same numbers, but they're a different type of currency. So I can't spend like you could spend. Your money's different than mine. So you guys, it was a lesson in what the flesh does. So what's happening in this country is this sense of what you eat, and you're bad if you eat, you're bad if you drink, you're bad if you do this. If you want a big cup, you're bad. There's something wrong with you. So you guys, you can see this thought process that's being put to bear against this country. And you guys, that's the physical side of stuff. But I can tell you that there's a spiritual war going on that's going to bring the flesh and dominion in these last days. And we're going to rest in the faithfulness of Jesus Christ, because we're coming to a time that only the Spirit and presence of God is going to take care of us. So he said that there's a rest coming, and unless you take the name or the image or the number of the beast, you can't buy, sell, or work. So you can see coming down to what the flesh is going to do, that's what they do in communist countries. You have to use their money to buy. You have to go to their stores to buy. And if you don't have that registration, you can't go and buy. So this is already working in most of the world. But what you and I are coming to is, on the other side of this, is God talking about perfection. And the reason he's talking about perfection is because he perfects the faith in us. Because if you're going through really difficult things, you want to be in Christ Jesus to the fullest extent that you can. So in Matthew 5, in verse 48, Jesus said, "Be ye therefore perfect, even as your Father which is in heaven is perfect." And that's because, you guys, if I go through the things Jesus said in Matthew 5, somebody strikes me on the face, I turn the other cheek. Somebody takes my coat, takes me to court, takes my coat away, I give them my cloak also. If I'm operating at that level, then what can the world do to me? If they can take my stuff away, because he said, if they take your coat away and take you to court, take your coat away. He didn't say there was a mistake and you thought it was your coat, you picked it up off the rack and blah, 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 blah. Well, not your coat. And then if they take your coat away, which means you tried to fight it in court and you lost. The hardest thing to do is fight for what's right and then lose. Yes. If you're honestly in the right and then you're found to be wrong, it's like, how do you justify the right and wrong on that kind of a thing? Because, you guys, it creates inside of you a turmoil. That's where Jesus said, "I want you to have peace." And you guys, we're learning this. We're watching this kind of stuff going on in this country where people are just having all kinds of stuff go on that is not right. And what the Spirit of the Lord is telling us is, you get what's going on? Yeah, I do. There's a breakdown in what's real law. So what you and I are doing is coming to this place that says, okay, so God, you take us to the right place. I'm looking for perfection. I'm looking for absolute surrender to God. I'm looking, my plan is not short term. This is like an Olympic runner. And that's what Paul was talking about. He said, "I run like a man who keeps his body in subjection." Because he said, "I'm running after a prize." And you guys, that's what the church ought to be. We ought to have a long-term commitment to Christ that says, I'm happy that I'm serving you, but I'm unhappy with the sense of the intensity with which I serve you. That intensity is what makes the difference. I can run alongside somebody that's an Olympic runner. Jim Ryan came to the church here for a couple of years. And he's the guy that broke the first 4-minute mile when he's in high school. But you guys, the thing of it is, I never challenged him to a race. He was older than me, but I never challenged him to a race because he was still running like that. In fact, his whole life was still built around running. I said, "Hey, you want to go snow skiing? How about you and your family join us for snow skiing?" He said, "Oh, I don't snow ski. I could break a leg." I said, "Couldn't we all?" That's sort of the deal. You learn to do it right, and then you probably won't. I don't plan on breaking my leg. No, he said, I couldn't break my leg. He said, "I'm a runner. That's how I make my money." He said, "People still pay me to show up and run. After all those years?" Wow. That's what I was thinking. Wow. But you guys, you can see what happens when you become world famous. Is when you become world famous, you never outlive being that famous person. And you can live off of it. But you see, what we're after is to have Christ, the famous person. What you and I are after is that if Jesus raised Lazarus from the dead, and this whole town shows up because there's a man in this building who was dead for 4 days, and we are going to go see him, and we are going to go see the man who raised him from the dead, same place, same night. What kind of God are we serving? That kind of God. So you guys, what happens is, if my view is that we are just Christians and we keep the word and God said, you know, anoint with oil and God will raise up the sick, that's an okay thing. But if my goal is to be like Christ and I understand the ramifications of the world seeing Jesus, he's asking me and you to accept the fact that this will become something that is real in our life. An extension of the hand of God is just that. It's an extension of the hand of God. And his hand touched the lepers, they were cleansed. He spoke the word and the dead were raised. He opened blind eyes, he opened deaf ears, and he spoke and the dumb could speak. Now you guys, I've seen these things in small measures, but I've got to tell you something. Everywhere where God has done that, people came back to see what God would do again. Every place that I've ever been that God has done something supernatural, people came back to see what would be done again. Reinhard Bonnke, you guys, in Africa, the reason people come to his meetings in the droves is because the Spirit and presence of God does this in his meetings. So you guys, here's the thing. We think he's an anomaly. He's not an anomaly. He is exactly what it is when somebody sets their goal to serve God. And he set his goal to serve God when he was a young man. And God spoke to him, and he stayed faithful to that vision from that time on. So when everybody else was going somewhere else, he went to Africa. When all of his buddies were going into business and doing all these things that were lucrative things, he was in Africa and things weren't working right to begin with. He was just trying to find a place where God would open up a door. And you would think that if you were running the race, that God would make everything in front of you super smooth. And I got to tell you something. God has angels that are putting out hurdles. Oh, I love myself when I say those things. And it's not because he's trying to stop you. Listen, we watched a race the other night, and they set these hurdles out. And actually, in all the track meets we've been to, I've never seen them do this. It was a 440 or a 400 now. And they had hurdles set up. And right at the very end of the race is hurdles. Now, if I ran 400 yards or 400 meters, when I got to the last hurdle, I would just throw my body on it, collapse over it, and people would go, "Wow, look, he's draped himself over the wooden thing." But to tell your legs, we're going to jump this. To tell your legs, look, you, and they did a hurdle every, I don't know, they did five or six hurdles running around to get to this final hurdle. You guys, 440 is enough for me. You don't need to put little things in front of me to jump over. Those people just came running around and they're running, and besides that, they're raising the people beside them. What? And their nostrils are big and their cheeks are breathing and they're doing this like they're pulling air. Yeah? You've seen what I'm talking about. And then they get over these hurdles. Boom, they're over the hurdles. They just get throwing their legs up over the hurdles. The church hasn't done hurdles very well. And we haven't done hurdles in a long time. If we get one hurdle in a 420, 42 feet. If you ran 42 feet and you had one hurdle, we don't do well in that. We're complaining about the hurdle. There was a hurdle in the way. I was doing well till I saw the hurdle, and why did the hurdles come into my life? Because you volunteered to run this race. But that, yeah, nobody told me about hurdles. But you guys, you get what's going on to the church. The thing about hurdles is they only would stop people that don't make up their mind they can jump. Because when you look at how tall a hurdle is, and they got a low and they got a high. But when you look at a high hurdle, something in your brain tells you, man, isn't that too high? No. You run over that thing, and then you know how to, you just practice it until you lift both your legs the right height. And when you get on the other side of that, it's amazing how they ran their strides, and that's what happens. Any of you guys that have run the hurdles, you understand, you just get your stride. When you get to that hurdle, you just lift your legs up over. And you guys, but it is running with the vision of what's in front of you that you have to get over. Have to get over? Yeah. And you guys, how many times have you told somebody, just get over it? Yeah. Look how this tied together. Just get over it. Well, okay. But it isn't easy to just get over. If you think somebody put a hurdle in your way, it is not easy to get over. It's like, oh, yes, it is. You got over it. Well, yes, because I jumped it. Huh? I took your picture. Want to see it? It looked magnificent. So, jumping hurdles is that thing in front of our life that we can accept as an obstacle or something that we glaze over the top of. And we look like we knew how to do it. They've got tall fences out in Wyoming. And that's because the deer get out on the highway. They've got great big fences. You're thinking, why would you need a fence that high? Then you come up to places that the fences are about two-thirds that high. And you're watching these little antelope. We live where the deer and the antelope play. And those little antelope just come running across there. It's like, whoa, 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 he's going to run into the... He didn't run into anything. They could jump like my pig. My story. But you guys, you get what God is talking to you and me about. Is because here's the thing. Lazarus' life has been brought from the dead to run a race with hurdles. You know why? The people around him, the priests, have decided they should kill him Because he's a living witness to the resurrection power of God. Do you know why the devil hates you? Because you're a witness to the resurrection power of Jesus Christ. You think that it's going to go easy on you because you're a living witness to the resurrection power of God? It is not going to. And who would want it to be easy on you? Who would want it to be easy on them when the resurrection of power of God that brought you up set you on a course? And if the whole world hates you because he raised you up, here's my testimony. He raised me up. I'm kept by the word of my testimony. Because this book is my testimony. It's the story of me. It's the story of him. It's the story of us together. It's the story of you and me and how this church works and God's church universal works around the world. So you and I are facing hurdles, and it's like hurdles. Yeah. Whine. I didn't hear one of those kids out there whine. Not one. Well, and one kid hit a hurdle and crashed his head into the ground. And I mean, he had a serious crash. Didn't cry. He limped past me on the bleachers, but he wasn't crying. He had ice on his head. A girl from Oskaloosa hit a hurdle, put her face. I mean, she hit no hands down. She just hit her face. That's how she landed on the track. And that could, and you know what? And they didn't give, her coaches didn't give her any outs. The things that she had to do next, she had to do next. And she just bucked up and did it. See, the hurdles of life, it depends on what your plan is. It depends on what your long-term plan is. And whether or not the obstacles should slow you down. No, because you know what? If your plan is to beat the people that are racing against you, then you're going to want to win that prize. And that's what Paul said. You're going to win the prize. And he narrows it down to the fact that only one wins the prize. And so the point is, I'm racing against what? Everyone who would race against me in this race. Because adversaries are a race against me in this race. Yes? Adversaries. I can have adversaries. I can have people. One of the kids, somebody spiked the side of his leg. And it cut, put cuts on the side of his leg. He just kept on running. It's like, well, there's obstacles, there's adversaries, there's things in your way, there's mental stuff that you have to get over. But that's what starts it out. It's like, you know what? I look at that line of hurdles and I just tell myself, I'm going to run the hurdles. I'm going to run over the hurdles. And when you begin to think that way in your Christian walk and you get your plan long-term enough that says, I got gold medals in Oskaloosa. I got some silver medals at Oskaloosa, and I got some bronze medals at Oskaloosa. If that would be the end of it, you've accomplished a lot. But if your goal is, wow, this stirred up inside of me something that I could do this at the collegiate level. No, I could do this at the Olympic level. Because every Olympic winner started out just like you and I are sitting here, but they made up their mind they were going to do something until they finished it, perfected it, and brought it to the place that it would help them gold medal. That's what you want. That's what the church is. You guys, we've accepted just being on the sidelines. That isn't what God wanted. God said, I want you to run the race and I want you to gain the gold. Get that gold prize. Set out for that first place in Christ Jesus, because winning that place means that you are the first person at the battle. And the arrows are zinging at you. And you wouldn't rather be any place else on earth, because if the battle is raging and somebody's been hurt, and there you are to gather them, and you just stand in defense and defiance because somebody has to be taken off the field of battle so that they can be okay. Some kid that absolutely must have somebody rescue him, because otherwise the world's going to destroy him. That's the kind of place you're going to be first at. You're going to be the first person at the edge of hell. Because when Satan wants to come out and do warfare, you want to be that first person that meets that adversary so that the power and presence of God can do in you what God wants to do. It isn't first place so that everybody's cheering you in the stands. It's the first place so that you can do the things that absolutely must be done. And if nobody else could do them, you could do them. And that's what you and I want. That sense of God bringing us to this place that you get invited to the dinner. And with you comes somebody that everybody in town is talking about. When everybody in town is talking about that person, you guys, I got to tell you something. There's something precious about the spirit and presence of God. I have been in churches where they were talking about what God did the night before in a church service I was at, and a prophecy I gave to a young man, and the preacher was fighting him and me. called him the lowest of the low. He said, what I can't stand is these preachers that blow into town prophesy over the lowest of the low, and then they go away saying, yeah, somebody's going to go in the ministry. Do you know what? That kid elbowed me. He said, you know who he's talking about? I said, no. I don't like those kind of people. He said, he's talking about me and you. I said, he is. Which one of us is the lowest of the low? And I actually asked him that. I said, which one of us is the lowest of the low? He was patient because he didn't prophesy to me. He said he's talking about us. You guys, that guy was still in the ministry. I lost track of him after a couple of years, but he went on in the ministry. He was when I went to Sterling, Colorado in 1980, when I went to Sterling, Colorado, 1980, there was a little Spanish-speaking Assembly of God church there, and I went over there, and I asked the guy to invite his congregation. I talked to him. We had a really great talk, and I said, I preached at a service in North Platte. I said, do you know Sister Figueroa? He said, oh. He said, I was raised in her church. I said, then did you know David Dominguez? He said, of course I do. Yes, I know David. I said, do you know what he's doing now? He said, yeah, he's pastoring a church in New Mexico. See, the word of God spread. So you can be there, and the miracle is that God really did that. He was in a gang. You guys, he was in a vicious gang. And this kid's in his mid-20s. And he's got little children, four little children. And the spirit and presence of God drew him out of those gangs that night. Never went back. Never went back to drugs. Never went back to any of the stuff that was going on. God's spirit and power delivered him immediately. That's the God that we serve. But you guys, this is what was going on with Lazarus. He was so changed that the spirit and presence of God had everybody come. He was dead. Now he's alive. You want that in your life. That kid was dead in his trespasses and sin, but now he's alive. So I've experienced those kinds of things and watched God do what he wants done. And that's what you want in your life. You have a goal, and the hurdles, they're just nothing. This is a 400 with hurdles. Big deal. It's my deal. I love this stuff. And the hurdles, I get over them. I get over the hurdles. And when the enemy throws up stuff, faith does what? Takes it on. It takes it on. Faith doesn't back up. It's like, you know what? This is what we were made for. We were made to believe when adversity comes against us. So, you can be in a place that there's all kinds of adversity coming against you, and God can deliver you up out of it. Make your life completely different. What he does best. All right. Lord bless you guys. See you Friday night.